Welcome back, folks. You've heard me talk about Delgado Community College and the integral part that they play in our local economy on so many different fronts. I get to interact with a lot of folks that are business owners, and they all talk about Delgado and how important it is to the development of the employment base in this city. So today we are joined by the chancellor of Delgado Community College, Dr. Larissa Littleton Stieb, as well as Jennifer Fernandez, the dean of nursing at Delgado. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Hi, and we have one additional person with us as well, new that we're happy to have, Renee Randall.
Renee Randall, professor, respiratory therapy program director. I didn't know, I'd heard that only two folks had called in, but obviously she's sharing a phone with someone, and that's okay, because this is all important stuff that we will talk about, and appreciate y'all joining us. Chancellor, we're going to start off with you. If you could give us, you know, kind of an overview of the healthcare programs. And today we're talking about healthcare. There's a shortage in everything. I mean, pick it. It doesn't matter. And what does matter, though, is the role that Delgado plays in fulfilling the demands of so many healthcare institutions throughout the greater New Orleans area with nurses and alike. So talk to us about that.
So let me tell you, our healthcare programs run the gambit, Newell, at Delgado. We have extraordinary programs in LPN, registered nursing. Our registered nursing program ranks the top in the state and in the nation. We have rad tech. We have respiratory tech. We have EKG, phlebotomy, as well as pharmacy tech. You name it, we have it at Delgado Community College. And, you know, it's not just that we have it. We do it extraordinarily well. And our business partners, our healthcare partners, they are on board with what we produce because they play an integral role in ensuring that what we offer our students, the way that we prepare them, that they are ready to go to work day one. And that is really what it's all about, is preparing individuals for careers that will change their lives, that will change the lives of their families. But not only that, our research and what we have, our data shows that individuals who complete at Delgado Community College in healthcare, they stay, they live, and they work right here. So we are not producing graduates that leave the state of Louisiana and go and work in Texas or go and work in Mississippi. They reside, they continue to live right here and work with our healthcare partners.
Chancellor, things don't just happen. You got to make them happen, right? And what I love about the approach at Delgado is that y'all listen very closely to what industry is looking for. And it reflects itself in the data, right? Mm-hmm. And when your students leave Delgado and the success that they have.
Yes. And let me tell you, the data, it doesn't lie. Because when we're able to say that our registered nursing students, 98% of them pass the NCLEX, which is the national exam that all registered nurses, no matter what university you've attended, our students take that same licensure exam. For us to say that that is our output, it's not just us saying that. That is what the licensure rates for the state of Louisiana, that's what it says. And so those individuals are walking into roles and filling roles in the hospitals that are extremely important.
And it's not an easy test. I hear nurses complain about it all the time. You know, the same way that we lawyers complain about the bar exam, right?
I mean,
it's not an easy test. Let's go to the dean of nursing, Jennifer Fernandez. Jennifer, I guess that's a fair characterization. It's not an easy test, right?
You are definitely correct, Newell. How are you doing today? Always a pleasure.
It is. Thank you so much for joining us. So talk to us about, you know, not only 98% licensure pass rate, but what I find absolutely amazing is that everyone that graduates, they get a job. 100% placement rate. That's incredible.
And let me tell you, that 100% placement rate is not just nursing. We have 25 different allied health programs, and we have pretty much a 100% job placement rate in every single one of those, because job stability in healthcare is not going anywhere, right? We are pretty much one of the ones that's guaranteed stability, advancement throughout life, and always going to be a high wage, high demand in our state. And we're seeing changes across all of the landscape, and we are needing so many more healthcare, workers as we continue to expand and our communities continue to age. And the best thing about Delgado, you don't have to have your entire life figured out, right? You can come to us, and you don't have to know exactly what you want to do for your entire life. Right? You don't have to have your entire life figured out. The point is that you come and you take that first step into a meaningful career.
Yeah.
It's the importance is that you start. And you can start here with us in 8 weeks and get a job working in a facility, get a foot in the door at one of our hospital partners. And employers love working and promoting within. So once we can get students in with a certificate program, whether it's CNA, phlebotomy, EKG, and they get their foot in the door with that facility, now they have additional opportunities for tuition reimbursement, flexible scheduling, advancement opportunities, job shadowing, because let's face it, Newell, not everybody's meant to be a nurse, but there is a place in healthcare for everyone, right? We've got a spot for you. Maybe you're not the best person at the bedside to be talking to everybody, but you're incredible on computers, and you can see you have an eye for detail on catching those labs that are microscopically off, but that can save a life in a minute. So every single one of these roles is irreplaceable, and we have it all, and we can get them all to work together. Renee, would you like to talk about that? Experiences?
Yeah, let's go to Renee Randall, Professor, Respiratory Therapy Program. Talk to us about the Respiratory Therapy Program. But in both Jennifer and Renee, I want y'all to go back to salary, because a lot of times we don't talk about that very often, but there's a big story to be told there. Go ahead, Renee.
Well, Newell, you are spot on. Thank you for that.
So thank you for having me. Salaries are so important in the current economy we're living in. The one thing I love about Delgado is our students can receive the same credentials at a community college that they can receive at a four-year university, have the same credentials to go to work and earn the same pay when they didn't spend nearly as much on their education. Obviously, I'm biased to respiratory therapy. We are kind of, I like to say, the unsung heroes in the healthcare workforce. The salaries for allied health in many fields are very comparable to registered nursing. I feel like a lot of people think your only opportunities in healthcare is to become a doctor or a nurse. And we have so many opportunities in allied health. For instance, respiratory therapy is probably one of the higher paid allied health careers that only requires an associate degree. Our salaries at the entry level are comparable to what the registered nurses are making at the entry level.
So they're coming in to work making $70,000 a year, just like the registered nursing new graduates. And a significant need, too.
Correct. The forecast nationwide for respiratory therapists is a 14% growth for the next 10 years, according to Bureau of Labor Statistics. And 14% may not sound like a whole lot to someone who's not informed, but most careers are only expected to grow at a rate of about 5 to 6%. So that is a significant demand that is needed nationwide for RTs.
So to be able to complete a degree in 2 years at what, $13,000? And that would be the tuition for about the two-year degree, about $13,000, to go out, have a job in the field probably day one, because there's the need, and a new graduate can go out making $70,000 to $80,000 a year.
And what's interesting about Louisiana, this is good and bad. It's good for those that are in respiratory therapy. It's bad because we're a little bit of an outlier, right, in respiratory distress and the acuity levels of our respiratory patients here in Louisiana. Would that be correct, Renee?
Correct. We have a lot of industry here, which could potentially lead to respiratory disease. So again, that's a positive negative. You know, industry brings jobs, but if it also brings potential air pollution, we still have fairly high levels of cigarette smoking and vaping in Louisiana. The South is notorious for not being the healthiest people. So, yes, the demand is very much there. The patients are aging. Our technology is just exponentially growing, which is great for patients because they're living longer. But as they live longer, the need for healthcare providers is just growing at a rate faster than we can keep up with.
And this is a question for any of y'all, but let me just ask the chancellor, Larissa Littleton-Staub, chancellor. A lot of folks decide to go to Delgado and other colleges. I was a late bloomer. I didn't go to law school until I was in my late 30s, right? But Delgado offers this very unique opportunity that we just described. And when you're in either allied health or RN or LPN, because of the vacancy percentages in our market here, you know, you may have already established your life here, you're pretty much guaranteed you're going to be able to stay here. And
yeah.
48% of the nurses in the New Orleans region, they're from Delgado. So it, yeah. It speaks volumes.
Yes. And we can do more. We can do more. You know, we are exploring and will implement evening, weekend college in those areas because we know, right, that individuals have to work, you know, and go to school. They have other obligations. And so we are setting the standard in terms of just opening our doors to ensure that we're able to educate those individuals so that they can obtain jobs. And we remain the 48%. Or maybe even higher, because our industry partners, they need that. They want that, and they deserve it. And I'm going to be honest with you, Newell. I'm really at a point that I'm tired of this state having to get individuals from other states to come in and get these jobs. You know, we have to be in a position where we can train individuals now, give them what they need so that they can get the jobs in the state of Louisiana, and they don't have to leave out, right? And we don't have to bring people in. You know, I am a mother of three. I want my children to stay in Louisiana. I want my grandbabies to stay in Louisiana. I don't want them moving to Texas or Alabama or where have you. So it's incumbent upon us to ensure that we're able to offer those opportunities to individuals when they need it.
Now let's talk about facilities. Y'all have a brand spanking new facility. It's gorgeous. I've been through it. It's quite the place. A lot of experiential learning going on there and a lot of AI that's embedded in the coursework there. And the utilization of, what do you call it? It's the... it's you're not using real live cadavers, you're using simulated cadavers,
yeah.
And which is absolutely incredible because you get more time, more availability, and more access, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you can't hurt them.
Beautiful thing about,
because if you do, they'll yell at you, right?
they do in good practice.
The one thing that I love about simulation is the opportunity to really ensure that the student receives a well-rounded education. I can't tell you, for instance, my own personal experience. I graduated from respiratory therapy school and never witnessed a patient go into cardiac arrest. So I was very intimidated when it happened the first time and I'm the real therapist. So we can guarantee these experiences for students in the simulated environment. We can make sure that they really are fully prepared because we don't want someone to experience cardiac arrest just so our students be prepared in clinical, but we can do it in a simulation. The other wonderful thing about simulation is the interprofessional education opportunities. It truly does allow our students to learn to work together, even just to communicate with not only each other, but with actual providers. We have been so blessed at Delgado to have providers from the community come in and volunteer to serve as the ER physician or as the OBGYN and actually do a C-section on a simulator. And that is just a priceless opportunity that our students are having to grow comfortable with the providers and understand that they are people as well who just want the best outcomes for our patients.
Absolutely. And I love that the whole, healthcare community is, they give back in so many different ways, and especially in training. And it's great that y'all take advantage of that.
We have been so blessed with all of our partners. They've been so involved. And it also helps us to meet their needs. So I'm sure everybody is aware in the state of Louisiana of the increased mortality risk in maternity. So we are able to do those high-risk deliveries and such in the simulated areas so that our graduates can go out and be better prepared to save lives, because we are changing and saving lives while strengthening the healthcare workforce of Louisiana all at the same time.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. I just want to remind everyone that Delgado is in the midst of summer enrollment. Their summer session runs from June 3rd to July 29th. In-person, online, virtual, hybrid courses, transfer courses from all regionally accredited colleges and universities that meet the admission requirements are accepted. It's a great opportunity. And on the 14th, Thursday, from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the City Park campus, they will expedite this registration process for students. They'll have folks that are there. You can visit it. You can go to the website, dcc.edu. Or I love this about you guys. Y'all give them a cell phone number and a text to text. So you can call at 504-671-5000, or you can text them at 504-414-0493. Y'all don't leave any stones unturned, that's for sure. Thank y'all so much for visiting with us today. Truly appreciate it. Chancellor Larissa Littleton-Stibe of Delgado Community College, Dean of Nursing Jennifer Fernandez, and Renee Randall, Professor of the Respiratory Therapy Program, the director there. Thank y'all so much and have a great week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we come back, we will visit with Emily Stack, Executive Director of Moms for America Action. We just heard how respiratory therapy is vitally important to vapers. Well, we're going to talk about vaping and the problems that we're seeing, the problems we're having. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Emily Stack, Executive Director of Moms for America Action. We're going to talk about vaping and vapes that are available to our kids. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Emily, this continues to be a persistent problem. We read about it, daily, weekly. There's not a story or a study that reveals that this is just not good. And we allow people to market it to children. We entice them. How do we get our hands around this issue, and where do we go from here?
Well, currently, it's a bigger issue, I think, than a lot of people realize, because we're looking at maybe like 80% of all vapes in the U.S. are from China here illegally. So that's something that's not FDA approved. We have no idea what's in the contents of these vapes. They're, they're colorful, they're fun. Some of them even look like games and have like childlike flavors that, I'm not saying birthday cake specifically, but something of, that nature that wouldn't appeal to you or me. But it is something that's appealing to children. So they're marketing specifically towards our children, and it's getting into their hands, and they are like, they're facing serious health repercussions from this.
So how do we get our hand? How does this enter the country? How do we not, how are we not able to deal with it, with this issue?
So a lot of these, and some of these are actually getting into like vape shops, and I don't know specifically how, like, if it's coming through like on the black market as far as like what like the shipments or what, but they're ending up in the communities and the vape shops, you know, less than reasonable places that you're going to normally find good communities. And they're just kind of, you know, I don't know if the children are like getting them in the schools from each other or where in that nature, but there's so many of them that even like normal adults are able to get their hands on them as well. And they might not know, because the FDA only has about 45 approved vape products specifically. So any normal adult could also be smoking these and not even know and face health consequences themselves.
And they're approved by the FDA. So if they're not approved by the FDA, then they're otherwise illegal, right?
Correct. That's, yeah. And like I said, it's about 80% of them are not.
So obviously we know that President Trump heads to China this week. One might ask, should this topic, is it important enough to be on the menu of conversation with Xi Jinping?
Most certainly, because not only is China trying to like push something that they themselves would not even approve in their own country. Like they will not, they say it's a health risk, but they're dumping it here. So it's also a financial thing for them. Like it's a national security thing. They're making $213 billion in the tobacco industry, and they have a national defense budget of $214 billion. So they're making quite a good buck on us, and it's coming at the cost of our children.
So also, when we think about the FDA, I don't know if you saw this, but Marty McCarry, and I'm not sure what he's done relative to illegal vaping here in this country, but he just resigned moments ago. So here we have, again, uncertainty as to the leadership of the FDA, which is the enforcement. I guess they're the enforcement people that need to step up to do something here, right?
Right. And they had recently started Operation Vape Trail, which was meant to, like, you know, help crack down on this. But he was kind of the holdup on the $200 million that Congress had allotted to the FDA to help with this crackdown. So I'm not sure what the next steps will be, but there's money waiting to help with this, help crack down on this issue.
And I would imagine there's a healthy percentage that we should be able to catch through the traditional importation that has to happen going through customs and everything else, right? I mean, I know we're not going to get it all. I know that it comes into the country through some other illegal channels, but some of this, I have to imagine, is coming right through our front door.
It's definitely possible. Considering we have so many American smokers in the U.S., it's easy. Like, there's basically, it's one of those things. There's a market, and so someone's going to look to provide for the market, and it's not always going to be the best of terms, and it's always not going to be the healthiest either. So we just really need to be more vigilant.
In what you're doing, I mean, have there been studies done on some of these vaping products coming from China? And what are the ingredients that we're finding in them that's problematic for us?
I'm not familiar with what ingredients are specifically in them, but my understanding is, at least from different case studies, that they are highly more addictive. I had one mother reach out to us in our group who had said that she'd had a like pre-adolescent individual in the family, maybe a nephew of sorts, who had gotten his hands on one of these. And it had been found out that it was not like a FDA-approved vape, regardless, children should not be smoking. But he got his hand on it, and he had breathing issues, and like they had to take him to the hospital. So just from the case studies alone, these are appearing to be highly, like, much more, you know, toxic to the human body.
Yep. So what do y'all, what can parents and local leaders actually do? I mean, obviously, education is the key. The more that we can highlight this, the more that we can bring to the forefront, I guess, you know, these issues and the challenges and the dangers.
Well, it always, as you said, comes from education. So long as we're educating each other, the community, talking to our local legislators. Right now we have the federal side. There is money for this. They have been working around the country to do more busts on it. But we need to be contacting and communicating with our local legislators to work and do state registries so that we can know which ones are FDA approved and which ones are not. This helps local law enforcement. This helps with local shop providers. And it helps with parents as well and individual adults who are buyers. Just so we can keep an eye out for the, you know, the contraband that's coming in and be able to be, you know, individual community whistleblowers. But yeah, making sure we're educating. It's all about education.
Now, you guys, I'm sure, provide some guidance. So where can parents and folks go to learn more about this challenge?
If they go to momsforamericaaction.com, we currently have a petition running. It's a banner that's running across the top. If they sign the petition, we're taking that and we're making sure we can get it to local elected officials, federal officials. Just let them see, like, hey, this is an issue. Our parents are concerned. We want more vision on this and more action on this. So go there for more information and sign the petition at momsforamericaaction.com.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Emily Stack, Executive Director of Moms for America Action. And if you go to momsforamericaaction.com, there's a petition there that they're sending to try and get a brighter light on this challenge in dealing with the importation of these vaping units from China that, as Emily just pointed out, in China, their folks can't get any of these products, which is interesting in and of itself, and we wonder why we find ourselves in the predicament that we are in. Thank you so much for joining us, Emily Stack. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
It's Emily Stack, Executive Director of Moms for America Action. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. We've got some time to go to the phone lines. Give us a shout on any topic. We'll be right back. So I was reading this article by Rich Lowry the other day in the National Review, and he talks about why does AOC think billionaires can't exist? And he references this podcast. So I go listen to this podcast of what this U.S. representative has to say. And it's amazing that these people get elected to public office. It's amazing that they have as many followers as they have. And it's truly amazing that they can make so many ignorant statements about what makes this country so great, the opportunity that we have to excel, where people come from nothing, nothing, zero. They live below the federally identified poverty level. They grew up through public housing in the 60s and the 70s, like the head of Starbucks, right, as one example, and many others. And they put together an organization that becomes, in many respects, life-altering, culturally altering. And she believes that there's a certain level, and I quote, a certain level of wealth and accumulation that is unearned. You can't earn $1 billion. You just can't earn that. You can get market power. You can break rules. You can abuse labor laws. You can pay people less than what they're worth. But you can't earn that. Can any of us, as Rich Lowry points out in his article, you know, he says, is there a rational person that can look at the top 10 list of wealthiest people in the United States and think, what have any of these people done for us? Are you kidding me? AOC says that one of the ways that they get to be billionaires is wage theft. Well, obviously, she does not understand how the capitalist system works. You go to work for people and accept a job at a salary level that is acceptable to you. You don't have to go to work for these people. You can go work for somebody else. You can go develop some experience set, get educated maybe, go to a trade school, go to Delgado Community College. You can go get certificates and all kinds of different things that are going to increase your value as to what you bring to the table, not what they are willing to do for you. You have to prove your worth. These people are crazy. They're absolutely unbelievable. To go out there and suggest that the way that they become billionaires is by wage theft. Now, she tried to clean all of this up, as pointed out in Rich's article, defending her, and I quote his article, defending her categorical dismissal of the possibility of legit billionaires. AOC tried to clarify on X by saying someone can make $1 billion, but that's different than earning it. What? What are you saying? What are you doing? It's amazing, again, that we are electing these folks. And, you know, I can't imagine that becoming a billionaire is easy, right? And it's really not possible, as what's pointed out in the article, without creating substantial benefits for the rest of society. But I love how Rich finishes his article, because it's true. Becoming a celebrity representative who is hostile to the sources of American success and who evangelizes for economic ignorance is unfortunately much easier. And that is so true as to who's following who out there on these social networks, believing that these people have one scintilla of evidence or data or anything else to support any of what they're saying. They just say it. We'll be right back. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we have another episode in the battle of the FCC versus freedom of speech. And it really is kind of dangerous to really say that The View needs to offer equal time. You know, we'll also talk about the fairness doctrine, which plays into all of this, which, you know, Ronald Reagan actually abolished that in during his presidency, decided to just get rid of the, I think it was 1987, get rid of the fairness doctrine and the impact that that's having on us. We'll talk about that. And then also, Dr. Oz, not that I have total respect for him, but he's telling Americans that they're not having enough babies. So we'll talk about that.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way. Got a great lineup, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. See you in the morning.